I know what our organization is going to do. It's going to make people's professional development better. Every acquisition we have made to date, the turnover has gone down, not up.
Hey, Warriors. Welcome today to Mission Critical Defense Recruiting, the only podcast that spills the tea on building killer teams in the defense industry. I'm Catherine Gerald, your navigator through the trenches of talent acquisition. We're not here to play it safe. We're here to kick down doors and redefine the game. Subscribe, share, and get ready to unleash the beast in defense recruiting. Our guest today is Matt Jones, who was just named one of Washington Exec's top execs to watch in 2024. Matt is the president and CEO of Sigma Defense, the tech company providing ISR systems and services to the DoD. The company's software-focused approach to TACCOMS accelerates info collection and sharing for faster decision-making and better mission outcomes. Matt has deep expertise in business development, change management, and strategic planning. Before Sigma, he held presidential roles at SAP National Security Services and TMA, consistently driving double-digit growth. What impressed me most is Matt's results-driven, big-thinking approach. As he says, he believes in dunking the ball and tackling major, impactful opportunities rather than just going for layups. Sigma Defense is positioned for more success in 24, with plans for new software launches and a vision to lead the way in advanced ISR and TACCOMS. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you so much for having me. It's exciting.
Absolutely. Well, I am curious how you got to be where you're at today. Tell me what prompted how you got into defense.
Well, I share your curiosity. I often look back and I'm like, how am I here? My story is interesting, right? It starts playing soccer. I got my first soccer ball when I was 3 years old. And I sort of devoted my life to soccer. So when I got to college, after my first season, my coach called me in and he said, I have good news and bad news. The good news is you're a really good soccer player. The bad news is you majored in it and we don't have that major at our school.
Wow. Wait, a major in soccer? I've never heard of this.
Well, because it doesn't exist. So, I mean, it's all I did. I didn't go to class. I drove around in a golf cart and played soccer and just thought I was super cool.
Was there like a PE major? You must have declared something.
I don't know. Whatever. Criminal justice major.
Okay.
Like everybody from New Jersey. I dropped out of college. I mean, I didn't have the discipline to be successful. I think I was a rather intelligent kid and a good athlete, but I just was focused on soccer.
To get to the next level, that takes a lot of discipline.
Discipline where I wanted to. Maybe that's the right way to say it.
Okay, the academic side.
And so I joined the Navy. And when I joined the Navy, it was, you know, the last piece that I needed sort of to be committed to something in my life that was beyond athletics. I spent 8 years in the Navy, worked for some amazing people, got to do some amazing things. And in 2003, I separated from the Navy and joined a small company that was called Argonne ST.
Are they really that small?
Well, it was very small and I joined.
Okay. What'd you do in the Navy?
I was a cryptologist.
So transferable skill sets in terms of what Argonne was looking for.
Yes, absolutely. So I joined, I was in the first, I don't know, 100 employees. So a small company when I joined. And what was really exciting for me through that journey was I got to see a small business grow to a mid-size, to make an acquisition. We went public and then to get acquired. And one of the first lessons I learned there was I got to see this full life cycle of a company. Private, how do you scale? What does it mean to go public? What does it look like to be a public company? And then what does it mean to get acquired? And that happened for me in 7 years at Argonne, which was just an incredible learning experience to me. For me, at the time, I had discipline. I was focused. I'd come out of the Navy. And what I learned kind of in building an organization is it's about keeping your people professionally developing the people who trust you with their careers and join your company. You know, I think a lot of companies talk about how they care about their employees, but they care about their employees at as like a static point. Like, you've joined the company, we needed a mid-level software engineer, and you're, boy, we appreciate you being a mid-level software engineer. And what I say on every town hall meeting is, though I want every person who joins our company to be with us for their whole career, that's not reality. Lots of people are going to come, lots of people are going to go. And one of the things that I see as my job is to make sure that anyone who joins the organization, should they decide to leave, which I hope they don't, leaves better than when they got here. And the parallel to that is my story. I joined as an operator trainer, then I led operator training, then I led training, then I went into marketing engineering, then I did business development, then I was a software asset lead, then I went into running our services business. I was able to scale with the organization and continue to move up. And I was able to do that because I had an infrastructure and a team of people who cared about my development. And so I think when I kind of think about the teams that I'm building, it's more than just has the person accomplished something. It's has the person made the people around them better. And that sort of force multiplier makes a big difference. So that's my story. How did I get to this job? I mean, I think I had incredible support and mentorship throughout my career to continue to develop and keep pace with the job and the responsibility that was assigned to me. And so I'm just, at the end of the day, people are like, how do you get there? I'm like, look, you gotta work hard, you gotta care, you know, you gotta, but it really is a lot of sort of good timing, good support, and good luck. And without those three things, like, I'm no better or smarter than any person in my organization. And so at the time, I'm the only person in the organization who works for everyone. And I truly see that as my ethos. Every day I wake up, it's how do I make mm-hmm. people there better?
I am the only person in the organization yeah. that works for everyone. That is powerful.
So I share your curiosity. I don't know how I got here. It's a collection of events, timing, and good people who cared about me.
Definitely.
Because I don't belong in this role, for sure.
Do you feel like you belong now?
I mean, I think that if you think about sort of where I came from inner city New Jersey, right, going to a good school only because I played soccer, you know, a single parent family, you know, I'm probably not the prototypical.
But back it up, because I think most often there's a misconception that to become a CEO, you've got to have gone to an Ivy or a GIT. Get a technical degree, or do it in a very specific way.
No, and you know, I don't share this often, but I do have an MBA, but that came in 2010, and I became a CEO in 2015. Those things are not correlated. That was just something I did, frankly, because I wanted a degree that came from a school that had a little more panache than University of Maryland, University College, where I got my undergrad, which I got working while I was working. So yeah, I think, you know, my background is I grew up, you know, pretty poor, but I went to a private school because my mom worked her butt off and I played sports.
What'd your mom do?
She was what they say now, she was an executive assistant for the Department of Transportation in New Jersey.
I can only imagine what that entails.
I think when she had the job, it was called secretary, but I don't think we say that anymore.
So your mom worked her tail off. You happened to go to a private school because you were a killer soccer player. But was it uncomfortable going to undergrad when everybody around you came from a different background?
You know, I was going to night school because I was working at Argonne at the time. So, you know, I came out of the Navy with discipline, once I got into Argonne surrounded by so many incredible people, it was really clear what I needed to do. And that's when I sort of, the light bulb went on, like, hey, I could do this too. If I had the credentials and I have the support. I listened to Katie Selby's podcast with you this morning. She was I wasn't nervous doing this. And then I listened to that. I'm like, I don't know how I follow that. And you know, she said some really, incredible things in there that I completely agree with. And for me, it was, just pushing myself to get to where, you know, I wanted to be. And she talked about learning more from bad bosses than good bosses.
That really stuck with me.
And I don't think I ever, as a face pops into my head, I don't think I ever had really a bad boss as much as I got to see, sort of have a first row seat for bad business decisions made by people. And sort of second guessing at the time and then seeing it play out. And that was giving me the courage to say, man, I think I could do this.
Seeing a bad decision get made, knowing at the time it's the wrong decision and not having the power to make a change.
And by the way, people make bad decisions all the time. Like
we all do.
There's no monopoly on good decisions. So, I mean, I feel like the question isn't, do I make good decisions, bad decisions? Like, of course I make bad decisions. It's when I make them, do I realize it quickly and have the courage to—
Just as long as we don't make them twice, right?
Right.
Good. Okay. You mentioned acquisition. Your first one was at Argon. Sigma has had what? Two acquisitions already this year?
Two this year. And depending on how you counted, five in the last 2.5 years.
Okay. So I'm looking at this from the lens of the recruiter in me who gets the call. Anytime there's an acquisition and everybody goes, oh my God, we just got acquired. I'm going to lose my job. How do you manage that integration and that pivotal cultural moment? I mean, you're in it right now.
It's kind of my secret sauce. I think I have a shift in my chair and get a little—
Ooh, you're going to divulge? We're all shifting in our seats now.
I believe that many leaders don't have the courage to be transparent. And they don't have the courage to be honest. And they don't practice radical candor. And that what people really want to know, and I like sports analogies, you know, if you watch a lot of the sort of inside the NFL kind of films, like the coaches are like exceptionally authentic. And I think that people just want to know where they stand, first off. And the second is, it's about when you're transparent, you build trust, and trust is what keeps integrations going well. I believe, and I had an experience with a company, I won't name what it was, what I was acquired. And everybody at the company was asking the acquirer what was the health insurance. And the acquirer's answer was, well, we can't tell you because we don't know what next year's benefits are. And so we can't tell you. And the point was, the people there, and I was one of the people, wanted to know, could my pregnant wife still see the same doctor, right? Can my child who has some sort of, you know, treatment plan continue with the same doctor? And the acquirer was thinking about, oh, we don't have an answer for, you know, what the plan is next year.
Right. But then not having an answer created a bigger stress for the employees.
So the direct answer to your question is, this is what I tell everybody. Give me 90 days. Just give me 90 days. Like, I know what our organization is going to do. It's going to make people's professional development better. It's going to have better back office and support and enablement. It's going to have a clear vision of where the organization is going. There's going to be lots of additional opportunities. There's not going to be big, deep cuts. And to a point that I will give you this statistic, every acquisition we have made to date, the turnover has gone down.
That's a win. That's pretty amazing, Matt.
And every company is fully integrated. And there's no secret sauce to this. It is, you got to be authentic. Like, this is what we're going to do, and then do it and ask for 90 days to prove it. And if you do that, people are willing to say, you know what, this isn't the worst thing that ever happened to me. And here's another thing. I was in the military. I worked in Rota, Spain for 2 years. I lived in Spain. And then one day my time was up and I called and I said, what am I? They said, you're going to Fort Meade, Maryland. And like my house changed, my friends changed, my job changed, my bosses changed overnight, right? But my allegiance, my job was I got new orders. And now I'm here and this mission, and sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't. It's the beauty. I don't run a prison, right? Every morning people can wake up and they make a decision whether this is the place they want to be. And I and the team work exceptionally hard to make it a place people want to be. And because we hire people who are force multipliers who make the people around them better, that spreads. I'm less interested in somebody want a $1 billion deal. I'm more interested in the person who can win $50 billion deals, $51 billion deals, because 50 people can win them because they make everyone around them better. That's how I build organizations.
Hey, Warriors, it's Catherine from El Rey Search. If you are steering hiring in aero and defense, you know the market's as dynamic as ever. Let's talk strategy. I'm offering listeners a free one-on-one search strategy session with me where we can dive into the latest market insights and comp trends. This could really sharpen your recruitment game. Just click the link in this episode's description to get started or visit lraysearch.com. Let's reach greater heights together. You just said a higher force multiplier. The question I have around that is, right now, we are in an A&D mid-market that is getting beat up in terms of compensation from auto, from tech, from the primes, and they've got huge deep pockets. We just did a poll where 42% of our A&D senior execs say it's compensation competitiveness that's their biggest challenge. How do you recruit those force multipliers?
There's something about this industry that provides compensation in ways other than bank deposits. And if that isn't what motivates you, then you're probably in the wrong industry. I understand your question, and I don't disagree with anything you said. I just think about it from the perspective of, If you don't make enough money, leave, and let's get the people in the positions who care about the mission, and maybe our execution on the commitments we make to our customers will improve. Maybe if people spent more time thinking about how do we keep pace with our adversaries and less time about what car they can afford, we would be delivering better capabilities. So I mean, to me, it is a, I feel like we're all fairly compensated. And for me, this is a passion. This isn't a, if I wanted to make more money, I'd go do something else.
Aero and defense is 55% above national average. We're just that much further behind auto and tech is the problem. How about Gen Zs and millennials? We know that motivation and culture are the most important in terms of recruiting this segment. What's worked for you? Obviously, you're running a tech firm, so I suspect you're heavy in that generation.
I think you have to be really respectful of different points of view. And that goes beyond just, you know, different generations. I think there's too much of the, this is, they don't know what they're talking about. Oh, this generation's bad. They can't communicate because they've been on their cell phones. All the like, I still believe I'm a young. I still feel young, even though I get older every day. I spent my early 20s and 30s in like relatively senior positions for my age, wishing one day I could walk in a room and people would be like, "He's old enough to have that job." And now every time I walk in, I'm like, man, I wish I was. I think it's about respect, and it's about understanding that the needs of employees change over time, and you have to be responsive to that. You have to change what your how do you compensate. You have to change how do you share data. You have to change how do you inform your people, and you have to give What I see a lot is there are lots of good ideas that come from, you know, the younger generation. And then what is the vehicle by which organizations are harnessing those ideas? And it's not just implementing them, because what the employee wants is a voice. And so are organizations giving a voice to multi-generations, or are they only listening to the senior voices? You know, I don't know. I know the answer in my company, but I think that is I think the challenge is in looking at, it's always about what is the motivation? Why does this person want X? What is it that drives them? And are you providing what they're looking for? I think that is how I approach the problem, right? We are a remote first company. We have people all over the country working. There's got to be a level of trust that people are working at home. We have our ways of making sure people are working. But we also have to understand, I mean, there is another town hall thing I say all the time is, we want a work-life balance that works for everybody. But we'll make no mistake, it will not always be in balance. And the employer-employee relationship is bi-directional. And so while I have an expectation of what everyone who works for Sigma Defense will do, how will they, when will they show up, how hard will they work, how will they represent our brand, those things matter to me. But I expect, maybe demand, that those employees hold me responsible for the things that I say. Because in exchange for my expectations, there's an expectation that I am professionally developing them, that when they have a hardship at home, that the company is there and will stand behind them, that they are compensated fairly and equitably across the board. Like those are table stakes. And I think that gets lost.
That is a huge insight you just gave. It's bi-directional. And here are the three metrics I expect my employees to evaluate me on. And one of those is compensation competitiveness.
For sure. And I own it. Right? I mean, it's my job to own that. Like, that's my job. And so when we have our I get asked really hard questions from our employees at town halls. And why? Because I create an atmosphere where, like, it is my job to be transparent and honest and open and answer the questions and deliver on the commitments I make.
This is one of the metrics I am accountable for. What's the toughest question you ever asked at a town hall?
I got asked something very specific around, and anyone can email me, I'll tell you who it was. We had a horrific dental plan. And there was just like droves of questions coming in. And it was overwhelming, but my answer to the question was, you know what? I have the same dental plan and I have the same complaints. And I can tell you now, 4 months in, we're switching next year.
Yeah, I agree. The plan sucks. We're going to take care of it was the right response.
I actually said, this dental plan sucks. And we did
radical candor. You owned it.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
You said the toughest question came from town hall. I expect that to be the toughest question would be related to the PE backed firms and the relationship. Since Argonne, you've worked with the PE world, right?
Yes.
What do you think the biggest misconception is in terms of having PE-backed owners and that relationship?
Biggest misconception? I think there's a confusion between venture capital and private equity. Listen, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, but I think VC is a little more sharky. And private equity is a lot more about investing and building businesses. I think that is a misconception, that there is this, it's all about the money. And I haven't, to be honest, I haven't found that. I mean, they're not for profits, right? So yeah, there's a desire to, grow capital and have subsequent exits that are fruitful for everybody. But, you know, I'm partnered with Sagewind Capital. Sagewind Capital is signed on for private equity for greater good. And so every employee in our company on an exit gets a percentage of the profit distributed based specifically on tenure, not on performance, on tenure, which means we're pushing a bunch of the profit down to the people.
Wait, back up just a second. Does this act like an employee-owned company?
No, I wouldn't say that.
So it's not like a traditional ESOP plan.
No, no, but it is a way, you know, when Sigma Defense ultimately goes on to its next chapter, that every employee in the company is going to share in that. Every employee.
I've not yet heard of this one. I've worked with a lot of PE-backed firms. I'm interested. Now I'm leaning in.
It's called Private Equity for Greater Good. And I think the private equity backing the operator often is, you find similar cultures. You know, I spent a lot of time, and this isn't a dig on any private equity. I spent a fair amount of time. I really chose my partner carefully.
Private Equity for Greater Good. That's pretty amazing in terms of benefit package overall. And also, it's amazing in terms of the culture.
Yeah.
It's got to be a game changer when everything's got skin in the game.
And for me, it's not just about everybody's got skin in the game. It's about a recognition that the hard work is some of the people who were like, what do I do? Emails, podcasts, town halls. Like, my job's not exceptionally complicated. There's just a lot of risk. If I make a really bad decision, like, I don't have a job.
Something tells me there's more complexity to your job than what you just said.
But what I'm saying is it is more about for me, Private Equity for Greater Good is more about the message it sends. It's more about the culture. It's more about the, hey, we're not trying to profit on the backs of the people working. It's about a rising tide lifts all boats. And I think that message is part and parcel to the organization we're building. It's why we're being so successful. Everybody's bought in on a vision. Everybody's bought in on a culture. And you know, all those companies, with the exception of the latest, the fifth, are fully integrated. Remember this. We acquired a company on February 13th, and on April 1st, the company was fully integrated.
So they all get on pace too.
And no turnover.
That is fast. That was Juno?
Yes.
How'd you do it so quickly with zero turnover?
I think we have a good playbook. That I'm not talking about.
You got to contact Matt for that one. I couldn't let this interview go without bringing up a subject that comes up in almost every bio I've seen about you. Tell me about the sneakers.
It is for me. I remember really wanting a pair of Jordans and it not being accessible. And so
a single mom, you guys were broke. New Jersey, going to a private school, every other kid's got them, and it's just not going to happen.
And I was a huge UNC fan growing up. I was a huge Jordan fan. And so I always wanted a pair of Jordans. And then, you know, it's more well known after movies like Air and things like that now, but the Air Jordan is really the first athletic shoe built for an athlete. And I think for me, that's what we do, right? Like, we build systems for warfighters, you know, and it is a drive of, I don't try to make money and then deliver. I try to deliver, which helps me make money. And that is a different way of running a business. And the Air Jordan was about, I want to make the athlete better, mm-hmm. and then the sales followed.
It's a good mission first reminder.
I love them. I have like, I don't know what I have like 36 pairs, something like that. I've kind of lost.
Do you have some on right now?
I don't.
Shoot.
I don't.
I saw your LinkedIn post. You have custom made Sigma Defense Jordans.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
They're pretty awesome. It's a fun hobby. I think it's kind of a call. I do have boy band hair too, so maybe I don't need Jordans, but you know, I think
you wear the boy band hair well. A little product in there too. I like it.
Well, thank you very much.
That's the secret sauce.
It's a matte manipulator for anyone out there who's jealous.
Well, Matt, this has been so much fun. Definitely appreciate you spending time with us today. Your candor and humility as CEO are nothing short of remarkable. Thank you.
This has been incredibly great. I appreciate this opportunity. Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Thanks for diving into the frontline action with us today. Subscribe, share, and if you love this mission, drop a review. I'm Catherine Gerald, owner of El Rey Search, signing off until our next mission together. For more info, visit elreysearch.com. Stay fierce and let's flip the script on what's mission critical in defense recruiting.